you're just tuning in on what Andrew's talking about, after 25 years, a committee said that in October 26, 2017, they were to release, 3,000 documents or so, as long as the president de jure okayed it. And
that's right.
Theoretically, Mr. Trump, in a tweet last week, said, yeah, I'm going to let him.
Yeah, as a subject to the receipt of additional information.
Yeah, I didn't like that line. Subject to the receipt of what information?
Yeah, what information? Hmm. Well, Lyndon Johnson's phone calls, which, you know, when Nixon became the man, the revelation that there was a tapping system in the White House that had been in place for
a long time.
Yeah. And in those phone calls, Johnson keeps talking about foreign complications. Foreign complications, why we, you know, we have to put this to rest because of foreign complications. Mm. And he said that the lives of 40 million Americans were at stake. So they were thinking World War III. World War III. So it is, you know, the logic for covering it all up and making it seem like a lone nut were all because we were trying to avoid a war. So part of all of this is that they did it, but they did it for good reasons, and that, you know, nothing is going to be found to be conspiratorial, but merely that they were trying to protect us, we the people, from what we might in passion engage in. So
I'm curious, of course, Cuba has come up so much, and you've studied the JFK thing forever in the whole JFK thing. Bay of Pigs. What has been the whole deep state boys' feistiness against, what word would you use, pushback on Cuba? I mean, here's this little island, Fidel Castro, some commie smoking cigars. And I mean, why has Cuba been such a problem for these people?
Well, I think it's the same as the Cold War. Hmm. What the American people could have learned from the Russians regarding World War II was reason enough to, you know, freeze them off. Don't talk to them. We don't want to hear what they have to say. And I think the same is true of Fidel and of Cuba. You know, the information that Castro had about the dirty tricks and stuff that were engaged in by the CIA and by the United States was enough to keep him. He's persona non grata. You can't talk to him or talk about him.
Yeah.
Can't go there. Can't visit him. Stay out of it.
Oh, because he just knew too much.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the whole Fidel did it, you know.
Just like Putin did it today. It used to be Fidel did it. Right?
It was Fidel did it.
45 years ago.
Yep.
Was the Russian missiles thing, which I do remember, about trying to, was that all real?
No, I don't.
In your
think
opinion,
it was, I don't. Think
you think
it was
the whole
real.
Thing was a false flag as well?
Just like that communist assassin, you know.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't. So JFK was part of this scam?
Unfortunately, you know, that missile deal that they made in Turkey, is that the one you're referring to?
Exactly. In other words, we were told. I remember, and you can see movies about it. That of course, Khrushchev was wanting to put rockets into Cuba, and there was this blockade, and it was like down to the. You know, you're going to either shoot them out of the water or turn around, that kind of thing, right?
And,
Russian missile crisis, it's called.
Right, and Kennedy said to Khrushchev through a back channel that if you turn your ships around, we'll pull our missiles out of Turkey.
Correct.
Right.
Right. The NATO missiles. Right.
And then they did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but we weren't told back
no,
then. No. We didn't know about the NATO missiles.
There was no linkage between the two. It was presented to us as a Kennedy victory,
and
it was presented to the Russians as a Russian victory. You know, they told their people,
"Oh, that we got the NATO missiles
out of Turkey." Right.
So, do you think that they
another reason for the Iron Curtain? You know, the wall between the two. So, we're not going to share information.
So, do you think they really were Russian missiles on these boats going to Cuba?
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah,
they really
do.
Were.
Yep. Yep.
So same idea of this geopolitical stuff when you talk about Iran and banking, and it's the same crapola, right? It's just different players.
And nothing new except the history we don't know.
Yeah.
you know, ZR rifle, and nobody knew about that at all. That was like a completely secret CIA assassination attempts on Castro. It was completely hidden from everyone.
The Mary's monkey thing?
Well, Mary's monkey.
Well, that's quite a story, right?
Sure, sure.
New Orleans, right?
Yeah, William, was it? Professor, Dr. William Oxner.
Creating this, tell him what it is. He was creating this cancer thing that they going and shooting Castro.
That was the intent, yeah, to send this in there and give Castro cancer. Curiously, that's what eventually took care of the other guy who played a key role in all of this. You want to get me out of here? I'll tell you the story. So there is no cover up that can hold up forever, and even the Kennedy cover up. So they can forge the files and backdate them and do everything they can, but at the end of the day, the links between events just is, it's immutable. You can't get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some numbers about the percentage of people that believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin with these files coming out tomorrow. And it's really high that people don't believe it. I mean, it's huge.
That's right.
I'd like 75% or something.
Well, you know, Jack Ruby, we all talk about, of course, Lee Oswald being assassinated, right?
Yeah.
But Jack Ruby.
That Sunday morning.
Right. Jack Ruby was caught and he was put in the jail. And he called the FBI and said to them, look, I'll talk to you, but you got to get me out of here. I can't talk to you here. Take me to Washington. I'll talk to you there.
Because they'll kill me here, right?
They'll kill me. If you leave me here, they'll kill me. And curiously, you know what he died of?
Cancer.
Yeah. I wonder if from Mary's monkey, maybe. Who knows?
No. Here, Jack, take this shot.
Yeah. Here, Jack, you're taking the shot.
Need a vitamin B12
shot. Yeah, you're in jail. You have no choice. Yeah.
So the FBI didn't take him out and talk to
him?
No,
no. No.
Boy, how can you get around that?
Yes,
I mean, does it even make sense, does it?
Yeah.
Mm. What does Andrew think about hydraulic fracturing, also known as fracking? What does he think about it? I don't know what that means.
Don't know anything about it. Don't know enough about it to formulate an opinion. But essentially, they shoot high-pressure chemicals and water into the ground to fracture the shale rock that holds the oil, releases the oil, and then they pump it out of the ground. But people suggest that the chemicals that they inject in there are dangerous.
In the groundwater.
In destroying the groundwater. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about it to give you an absolute sure that, you know, this isn't dangerous. So it may very well be. We just don't know enough about it.
Yeah.
And you know, for many environmentalists, that's enough of a reason to stop doing it.
Sure.
You know what the hell you're doing.
And then also there's plenty of conjecture, and I think quite a bit of evidence in some areas, even Ohio or Missouri, that this fracturing thing is causing earthquakes. Minor earthquakes, you know, you start messing around with Mother Nature like that.
Yep.
But is this the kingpin of making United States more energy dependent, this fracking thing?
Yeah.
Is it? So this could be a short-term thing.
Sure,
this thing blows up, right? Uh-huh, if the whole thing blows up.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. speaking of the UN, writes Bruce, you can find UN not postal stamps being sold at the concession stores in parks, U.S. national parks.
Sure.
I know this for a fact because I used to work in the National Park Service. And, of course, you can also find the UN actually worming their way into the parks themselves. Smoky Mountain National Park is now the Smoky Mountains International Biosphere
Reserve.
Under UN control. Ooh.
That's right. That's
and it's also been for a couple of decades. Also, we did a show, Andrew, with Scott Tipps, an attorney with a Freedom Foundation. Cool guy. And, boy, if you really dig in and see the UN's control and involvement in this whole codex thing.
Oh, yeah.
And monitoring,
elementary codex, yeah.
And monitoring how many milligrams of vitamin C can be.
That's right.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Where did they get all
Where did they come from?
Where did they come from?
Well,
I mean, where did they come from?
The Rockefeller Foundation donated the land for the UN to sit on.
Well, that makes me feel better already.
It should make you feel better.
The Rockefeller Foundation?
Absolutely, yeah. They're the ones that gave the UN the land to build on.
And so somehow they do this. So when the UN, what, it's about 100 years old or so?
1945.
Oh, 45, yeah.
Yeah.
So somehow then they convince...
They worm their way in.
Love
the way the writer put it.
Yeah.
So this is a person who used to work in the national parks.
Yeah, and it's the International Biosphere.
Great Smoky Mountains. When they put that sign up,
wow.
I actually went there and took a picture of it. Couldn't believe it. You know, it's like they've signed over the sovereignty of the Great Smoky Mountains to the UN. This is now an international biosphere reserve. It's no longer a national park. And President Obama, God love him, saw fit to put a bunch of other things under the UN's jurisdiction, you know, national monuments like the Statue of Liberty, UN Biosphere Reserve. Yeah.
Oh boy, let me see if we got a couple more, and then we'll go. What are you going to do today?
Do you want to stick with Kennedy? All the Kennedy stuff.
Oh well, sure. Well, let's do. I mean,
no,
I would just.
No, it's all right. I know it's not quite November.
No, that's okay.
Let's see.
To galvanize support for nationalism, this country could use a dose of Archie Bunker's wit and wisdom from the 1970s sitcom All in the Family. It was hilarious to watch him argue with his meathead son-in-law and society in general.
That's
in defense
right.
of the good old U.S. of A. Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah, no, yeah, the meathead.
Yeah.
Of course, Rob Reiner.
Yeah.
Yeah, today he's still the same globalist that he was then. And that is correct. That is correct.
Right.
You know, he was...
Oh, Rob is, yeah.
He, Rob Reiner and the Meathead were intended to make Archie Bunker look like the caveman that he was depicted to be, and that his thoughts on liberty and patriotism were outmoded, and that Meathead had the correct way of thinking. So, the commie. That was a great show, wasn't it?
Oh, man.
Oh, man, just, All in the Family, yeah.
It was amazing that they even got it on.
Yeah.
Who was the producer? What's his face? Norman Lear. Norman Lear. What does Andy think writes a D of investing in Amazon today?
Well, I like Amazon of all the FANG stocks. Apple, of course, might have run its course, but I think Amazon has still a long way to go. And their vertical integration between Amazon and Google, those are the only two that I could remotely say still have a chance to grow.
They're about to do, what do they call, Q4, their new headquarters.
Yeah.
And they're getting bids.
HQ2.
They're getting bids from around the country. And you know what
New bids, Jersey offered them $6 billion.
You know what bids mean? How much will you give us
if we build there? Yeah.
What did New Jersey say? We'll give you
$6 billion.
$6 billion?
Probably the biggest bid so far.
So they'll probably win, huh?
No.
What do you think?
I think even an idiot inside of Amazon would realize that bringing their operation to New Jersey would expose them to a greater tax liability than anywhere else in the entire country.
So what do you think a fellow like Jeff Bezos thinking? It's not just about the money. He needs a place where you can do 50,000 employees, too, and have them have a good time, right?
Yeah.
You know, party down.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, Austin wants it, but you can't even drive on the highways now. There's no way they're going to get it because they don't have any really good public transportation in Austin. So maybe a place like Dallas, Atlanta, something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. But can you just move in and have a city absorb 50,000 new people without it just being totally...
Well, if it's a place like...
Is there really 50,000 in HQ2?
Yeah, 50,000 HQ2. If it's a place like Newark, New Jersey, where we're losing 50,000 people a year.
Well, yeah, because you guys are going south where it's warm.
And everybody's picking
and
up and moving.
It
has nothing
state
to do
taxes.
With the weather.
No, state
nothing.
Taxes, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Takes
man.
Taxes. Yeah. Nothing to do with the weather.
Nothing to do with the weather.
Yeah, good.
So a friend of mine pointed out my commercial office building where the office is located on Lafayette Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I famously talk about our taxes at $20,000 a year.
That's
$20,000 a year.
I can't believe that.
And right down the street is a tiny little beauty parlor with an apartment on top. So my friend comes by. He goes, "Hey, you hear Viola's beauty shop is for sale?" "Oh, yeah. What do they want for that?" $335. I said, $335? That sounds incredibly cheap for a parcel on Lafayette Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it only $335? He goes, well, the taxes are $24,000 a year.
Huh.
$24,000 a year. Can you imagine $2,000 a month, even if you own the building outright, to have a beauty parlor? Forgive me, it's been there a long time as a beauty parlor. It would be a salon today. But just an example of what's wrong with New Jersey. Our taxes are so high that no sane company like Amazon is going to put its operations here. There's no reason to do so, no economic reason, that's for sure.
When did this whole property thing start? I suspect it was around even when my dad bought a home for us, back in 1955, but it was probably just pittance, right? Or
right.
Was it even around back then?
Yeah, it was around. But pittance is a great way to describe it.
Probably just nothing, right?
The politicians realized that they could cement themselves in office and take care of all of their friends by giving them jobs with defined benefit pensions and, you know, wonderful perks. Once they started handing out jobs, then they could get themselves reelected quite easily. Their whole family would vote for them and everyone that they had gotten a job for. So for us here in New Jersey, what it means is that one person in eight works for the government or is on some sort of a pension from the government. One person in eight.
And then somewhere along the line, the property tax thing, Andrew Goss started to get involved with education.
Well,
right?
Sure.
And then that was when they really started.
We spend $41,000 per pupil.
$41,000
per pupil.
You could hire a private nanny and
you
keep
hire
them at
PhD,
home.
Could hire a PhD. That's right.
You could just let them stay at home.
$41,000 per pupil.
That's nuts.
And then so because we're a so-called rich district, and all the inner cities couldn't afford to spend $41,000 a pupil. So then their school system started to suffer, and people started moving from the inner cities into the suburbs where the good schools were. And then, so then suddenly the state decides, well, we need to subsidize the poor school systems. So if you're spending $41,000 a student, we're going to take some of your state tax money, and we're going to give it to those underprivileged cities and let them be the ones that spend $41,000 as well. And then into that crept the waste and abuse and the fraud. Let's not forget the mayor of Patterson. I think three of the last four mayors have pleaded guilty to corruption.
Uh-huh.
Three of the last four. The last one was accused of using DPW employees to renovate his house. So, this sort of it's okay kind of a thing, kind of an attitude, has permeated politics in New Jersey, and it's corrupted us so badly that there's just no way out. The only way out, pack up your stuff and get the heck out of town.
Jeremy, he is in San Jose. What does Andrew Goss think about the basic idea of cutting taxes and as President Trump is proposing and have it, the shortfall being paid by more economic growth?
No question about it.
You think it's,
Let's look at it.
Do the numbers work?
Here's how the numbers work. Okay, so we're taxing our corporations at 35%.
Currently. Wow.
Currently. So as a result, the majority of them just got up and left. The ones that didn't set up offshore corporations like Apple to shelter their profits. And the only profits they allow into the country are the ones that they need just to keep their headquarters open. They end up paying very little in the form of taxes. It's gotten so bad that total corporate tax collections this year are just over $200 billion.
That's all.
That's it.
Wow.
The bulk of the collections are income tax.
You and me's, man.
Individual income and payroll taxes over $2 trillion. Huh. 10 times as much.
It's amazing.
So the logic is, if you're going to cut the taxes on a corporation to 15%, and now you're going to have a bunch of corporations come back to the United States and with them bring a bunch of jobs, then every one of those jobs will return triple what the corporation would have paid in taxes had they stayed and allowed the tax burden to hit them.
So the numbers work, you say?
They work great.
You believe?
Yeah, because if you reduce unemployment, increase employment, then you increase the flood of payroll taxes into the Treasury. So much so that if we got 4% economic growth, which we haven't seen for 25 years.
Long time. Yeah.
If you got 4% economic growth, you could quickly erase the budget deficit. Quickly. Never mind the 8 years that Ohio Governor Kasich suggested it would take.
I mean, just with taxes, you could get rid of the trillion that are in the red?
Get rid of the deficit, yeah.
Really?
Not the debt.
No.
But, you know, at least the deficit.
The yearly deficit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the debt wouldn't keep going up a trillion every year.
That's right.
Or 1.2, I think.
Yeah. Wow. And the idea that that every president has doubled the national debt, starting with Ronald Reagan. That's been the case. And
Every president since Ronald Reagan has doubled the national debt.
That's right.
Wow. Yeah, you can look at the charts.
Yeah, it's very clear. And so if this current president holds the line and only adds $10 trillion to the national debt and only increases it by half instead of doubling it, well, then I guess that will be counted as a victory.
If he would stay 8 years
and only spend $10
trillion. Bonded debt would be 30 rather than 40.
40, yeah. That's about the best we can hope
for. But he could pull it off if they really got the tax cuts.
Yeah, well, that's right? Without them is no chance.
Yeah.
So with
Why
them...
Why doesn't he explain this to the American people like you just did?
Well, I think he's tried. I don't know that anyone's listening. And all that the Democrats want to say is, oh, well, if you cut taxes, you're going to increase the deficit.
That's all they do.
That's all they talk about.
And it's always for
Never
the wealthy,
mind.
Right?
Yeah.
The wealthy is where they
Oh,
go.
The rich.
The
yes.
rich.
We need
just
to
keep
tax
going
the
up.
Rich. You know, when they proposed this income tax thing, it was 2% tax on incomes over $100,000. And in 1913, that was nobody. That was nobody.
Yeah, who made
it? And the Pollock decision of the Supreme Court in 1894.
We love Pollock.
Had already ruled that income was the difference. It was profit severed from capital. And so if you put
that
up a dollar...
That was the definition of income.
That's it.
Pollock, yeah.
So if you put up a dollar and you earned a dollar with it, then your income was a dollar. But if you traded your labor for a certain amount of money, then that was an even trade. There was no income. No, there was no gain. So the only people that would pay an income tax were those with incomes greater than $100,000 a year, which at the time might have touched 400 people in the whole country.
Wow.
Today, everyone's rich. Everyone is paying that tax burden. So that's what happens with these creeping taxes. And once we allow the camel's nose under the tent, it never leaves.
Hmm. So why is it, if Pollock is still a standing thing, that we pay income when we trade our labor for dollars? I mean, what's up with that?
It's a voluntary system.
Oh, it's a voluntary. Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, no, a voluntary tax system.
Oh, okay.
You identify and pay tax on your income based on what you swear it is.
I see.
What, are they going to argue with you? No, that's not income? Of course not. Of course not.
That's hilarious.
If you want to pay, you should. That's your privilege because you're an American. So we have a voluntary tax system in which people voluntarily assess their own tax liability.
They say, this is my income.
This is my income. So if you're swearing that that's your income, what's the federal government supposed to do? Argue? No, that's not your income.
But you don't want to not report income and claim that Pollock is the reason because...
Well, if you don't understand, you shouldn't make a claim. That's it. I mean, so many people read what other people say and then use that as a basis for failing to report income or failing to file a tax return. To me, if you're not so well versed in the subject that you can defend it, your actions in court, then you probably shouldn't poke the giant in the eye.
Well, that would be the key. I think the operative words are defend your actions in court.
That's it.
And if you really wanted to take that and go all the way to a federal tax court.
Yeah,
with
well,
a jury,
no.
No.
Not a federal tax court. You're not in court at all there. You're in a legislative tribunal.
Well, okay, that's even worse.
That's not court.
All right.
That's like, having the NFL decide whether or not you are allowed to say or do something.
So you would lose there, right?
Well, of course you would lose there. You would lose there every time. No, it's only in a court of law.
But you can't even do that, though, can you?
Well, you're not supposed to be able to get into a court of law until you exhaust your administrative remedies, which would mean, getting rejected by the IRS court and then appealing to the IRS and being rejected again. So the administrative remedies that must be exhausted before you find your way into court usually outpace the typical American's ability to pay.
You think?
So in most instances, the economic decision is, you know what, I'm just going to plead guilty.
I'm just going to pay.
Yeah, I'm going to plead guilty and pay right here.
So what you're saying, though, even if you had bunches of money and hired a top attorney to take Pollock all the way to a federal tax court.
No, you'd have to be able to do it yourself.
Oh, why?
Why? Because
you couldn't
attorney.
Afford it, yeah.
That attorney
might
just
grand, right?
broke. Yeah, exactly.
300 so grand.
That's why I say if you are prepared to defend your actions
Man.
In a court of law, then you can take that tax.
Well, that's really ugly. So you just pay and just go down.
I would say
just pay, go down the road.
What I say to Americans is invest in taxes.
Invest.
You're investing because, you know, if you declare your income, okay, I worked this year, I earned $100,000, and I put that on my tax return. Now the banks look at your tax return and say, oh, well, he earned $100,000.
Let's lend him some money.
He's a good risk. Let's monetize debt for him or her. And absent that, you can't monetize debt, so you can't participate in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like, okay, if you'll join, I've said many times, if they gave Americans the choice, here are two lines for you here.
Huh.
Line one, 30% of your pay comes to us. And then for the rest of your life, we'll take care of everything for you.
Mm.
We'll give you student loans. We'll give you home mortgages. We'll give you subsidized housing and free cheese and all the other benefits.
I want cheese.
Cheese. Can I get some cheese?
I want cheese.
So if you want all of these free cheese benefits, then you stand in line A, and that only costs you 30% of your income for the rest of your life. Now, if you stand in line B, you don't have to pay the 30%, but you get nothing.
Nothing.
Don't count on any free cheese. Don't count on any mortgages or student loans or any of those things.
How about free health care?
No. You got to have an income tax return to get the Obamacare subsidy, right?
I see.
Yeah, so without all of that, no, you're done. So I believe an equal number of Americans would stand in each line. An equal number would say, okay, you know what? It's worth 30%. 30%, if I die before my kids turn 18, and you're going to give them a check every month until they turn 18, wow, that's not a bad deal when you consider it just from an insurance perspective.
Mm.
So I would urge anyone considering taking the route of, I don't owe an income tax because what I earned is not income, well, then consider the cost of that, you know, the cost of taking that position. If you're not prepared, don't do it. Don't just read someone else's rantings. Oh, you don't have to pay an income tax, and then stop paying. If you're not prepared and able to defend your actions in a court of law, then don't do it, period. Don't count on finding a lawyer that's going to do it for you, because you probably won't even be able to afford that.
And even if you got to the point and you wanted to do it and you were appointed a public defender, you'd lose so badly. I mean, you'd get... No way. He wouldn't know any of this stuff.
Be under the jail.
Oh, yeah. Under the jail. Be worse than being in jail, man.
Yeah, he'd be under.
Yeah, because they don't know this stuff. Here's a one that just kind of moves along in the same genre. Kevin, North Carolina. He says, I completely understand, in quotes, I think, how we can all be citizens of not only one entity, but of two.
Right.
United States citizen, state citizen, sometimes even three, such county citizen.
That's right.
At least in the form of income taxation from my experience living in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
My question for both of you, ask Andrew, don't ask me, are you or just Andy, how did they, meaning the U.S. and state governments, least in most states, get us into being responsible for paying income taxes for two different entities? How can we just claim one citizenship and just pay one? seems to me it's just double taxation and sometimes even triple taxation.
Right.
If you reside in a state like Maryland where the county takes its share, he says, I'm confused. Well,
okay, well, then you need to research the Clearfield Doctrine.
I beg your pardon?
And what the hippies used to call the merger, the corporate state. The corporate state. So the idea that your government becomes a corporation and starts to act like a corporation, and then you declare yourself to be a part of this corporation, and it grants itself extraordinary tax power. So in your case, it would be the state of Maryland and the county of Queen Anne and whatever. These are derivatives. They are of that state. So without getting too deep into detail, let's just say that they converted your government organization, which had to follow the Constitution and didn't have the ability to tax you on your basic property because it was unconstitutional. Now this entity becomes a corporation, which is extra governmental and has all the powers that it can assume. So that's how they put us in this position, by the creation of the corporate state. So in my case, the town of Hawthorne used to be a borough of, right? It was a town, a geographical description on a map. And then it became the borough of Hawthorne, which is a corporate entity owned by or created by the town. And that's what you have with your county of and so forth. So that's how they did it, by creating this entity. And of course, the courts have ruled, well, when you start acting like a corporation, you have to follow the rules that govern all corporations. And this is what's known as the Clearfield Doctrine. I urge you to research it a
Very
little
interesting.
Bit, and then you'll understand how it happens.
So the bottom line here with this taxation thing, because we get this comes up from time to time over the years, is just paying to Caesar.
Well, yeah.
So just paying to Caesar. What
yeah.
is Caesar? Don't poke the giant in the eye.
Right.
And concentrate.
Not
on
unless you're prepared. If you're strong enough, you know, if you're Davy and you can literally beat Goliath, well, then, okay, you know, have faith and go at it. But for most part, it's more like Don Quixote. You're tilting at windmills here. You're not going to win if you think you're going to go into some federal court and a judge is going to say, oh, you know, you're right. We've been reading this the whole time and wrong. And yeah, you don't have to pay income tax.
And that's just not going to happen.
Not going to happen at all, ever, under any circumstances. And if it is, if it does happen, they'll burn the transcripts and never let that information out. So don't think that you're going to be the one that's going to fight their way all the way to the top and take on the establishment and succeed in having them say, well, Andy's right, Patrick's right, you don't have to pay an income tax. A lawyer will tell you the Supreme Court has already ruled, the Pollock decision, you can look it up yourself, 1894, that the income tax is unconstitutional. Plain and simple.
The way it's set up, your labor exchange for dollars is not
income.
Yeah,
that's not income.
So well, so if it did get in, you know, just in a writing a screenplay into the court, they would just, like they're doing with the Kennedy docs released tomorrow, say, oh, we can, you got to hold that for 25 years.
We're holding that, yeah.
For 25
That's years. Not coming out.
And then when they do release it, they would redact it.
Yeah. or they would dismiss the case if they think they're going to lose, which they've done many times.
Oh,
okay,
really?
Case dismissed. Yeah, that's it. It's over. But we're not going to let a precedent be set. We're not going to let a ruling come out. We're just going to dismiss the charges against you. That's it. Done. Now you're done. Now your charges are dismissed. Now you can't bring your case to court at all. So, and I don't know of a single person patriotic enough facing some sort of a federal tax court in which a case is dismissed for going, no, no, I don't want to dismiss the case. Let's keep going so that I can prove that what I'm saying is correct.
Take it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, no, no, I don't want to dismiss. I want to continue. Who's going to do that? Everybody who's offered a dismissal just takes it and their case is buried. But that would have to be the person that has this, the pretrial stuff down so much that the prosecutors say, look, if we go to court with this guy, we're going to lose. And those are the ones that just get dismissed. You never hear from them again.
And plus, I would suspect that there are not a whole lot of attorneys that you could afford that would know this stuff.
That's correct.
As well as you do, I mean.
That's correct. You know.
How did you learn all this stuff?
Well, I learned it from following the footsteps of prior victims. The late Otto Skinner was probably the first book I read on the subject. If You Are the Defendant was the title of his book.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, many attorneys, past and present, have, of course, tread that path, and I always followed it carefully so that I could see.
So you could understand it.
Yeah, what the heck is going on? Lowell Beecraft.
Larry Beecraft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't he defend a pilot or something in Atlanta and win that one?
Yeah, a couple he won, yeah.
Yep. You don't win a lot, though, and it costs a lot of money to win.
Yeah, no.
And you take a chance, too, don't you?
That's right.
Because you could lose.
That's right.
End up in the pokey-dokey.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what was his name? Wesley Snipes?
Wesley Snipes.
He hired the wrong lawyer. Wesley did.
No, actually, he hired the right lawyer.
Well, I don't know.
No, he did. He won. His lawyers got him off on 9 or 10 of the 12 counts. With the wrong lawyer, he'd be making little rocks out of big rocks forever.
Well, maybe.
I think
so. But, you know, to me, it's not a victory when they say, you know, plead guilty to this one and we'll let you go.
But maybe that was his only choice, too.
Yeah.
You know, once you get down that road, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, great fun talking to you every Wednesday, Andrew. We covered a lot of territory here. As you being a JFK interest or scholar, and you've studied this forever, it'll be interesting to see what pops tomorrow, if anything of interest.
Mm.
You're going to be all over it. Is it just going to pop on the internet, these documents?
Yep.
Is that how it's going to work?
That's how it's going to work. Get them right out of the National Archives, like everything else.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it'll take a while to go through them, and I think it'll also be fascinating to look at the Washington Post, New York Times, and the Time magazine, and what they're going to spin on this of what was released, right?
Right.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
If there is anything interesting, they're not going to talk about it.
They're not going to talk about that. They're going to talk about other things released, and I'm sure that the biggest smoking gun for them will be the proof that the federal government engaged in a conspiracy to assassinate Fidel Castro.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right, kiddo, what's up with you today? You buying and selling gold coins? That's what you do for a living.
Oh, yeah, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. That's my job today.
Anything to sell?
Yeah, I do. I do. I have some great things to sell. I have a proof $3 gold piece from the Civil War.
Really?
Can you imagine one of 35 made?
35?
35. Well, they were thinking about other things in 1865, other than making gold coins for collectors. And so in that year, 1865, they made 35 of these coins, and they made their way into the hands of well-heeled collectors who weren't thinking about the Civil War.
Yeah.
And, of course, they stayed in their portfolios for 150 years or so until I got my hot little hands on one of the 35. And, in fact, my estimates, and I looked through auction records quite extensively, is that there are really only about 12 to 15 examples that survived since 1865. So I have one, and it's not a lot of money relative to what it is.
How much?
So $40,000.
40 grand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
40 grand.
40,000.
Do you know the history of
the provenance?
Like what is that called?
Provenance.
What does that mean?
Where it came from.
Where it came from.
Yeah, who had it, which family had it. Yes, I do.
And
I
also, I'd be real curious, can you actually see what the value of this thing is over the years?
Well, I know that the original purchase was $4.40.
My God.
For a $3 gold piece. $4.
Oh, a long time ago.
Well, yeah, 150 years ago.
Yeah.
And then it stayed in the same family, remarkably, all this time. So, like, that first generation made it through the Civil War and made it through the Spanish-American War and the Panic of 1893 and never felt the need to sell their coin collection. And then the second generation held it through the Great Depression and a couple of world wars and never felt the need to sell the coin. And, you know, third generation held it this entire time. And then the fourth generation has decided, well, it's time to sell. Mm-hmm. And they came to me, fortunately. Mm-hmm. So I bought it, and along with a bunch of others. It's one of the two great collections I've surfaced this year. And I'm very proud to be able to offer some of these coins to my clients. And these are rarities that you won't find anywhere else.
The deal, right?
It's like I say, go ahead. You can buy the other 1865 proof $3 gold piece on the market. Wait a minute. There isn't any. There aren't any.
You can't even buy one.
You can't buy one. Good luck. The last one that I saw was years ago. And so good luck. Go try to buy it from somebody else because no one else has it.
That's kind of fun.
Well, it's one of the prime reasons why I like rare coins as an investment. You know, if you have strong hands and you have the ability to actually say that.
Strong hands, that means you can buy something and hang on.
Yeah.
Right.
You're not forced to sell.
Hang on.
Like this family wasn't forced to sell through all these major events and sells only by choice. So, yeah, those are strong hands right there.
What happens if you own a coin like this that you pay 40 grand for
And want to sell it next week?
No. Okay. No, I was going to go in 5 years from now. It's time to leave your body and do something else and give this to the kids. Doesn't the gov, the one we love, get a big chunk of this 40 grand?
Well, no, I don't know about the 40 grand. I know if there's profit on it, they might get a piece of that.
But I mean, just the coin itself.
Generally speaking, the coin itself, I suppose somebody would have to say, well, I inherited this, or I bought this, or I have some cost basis in this. But I'm not an attorney. I'm certainly not a tax accountant. So how would you handle an item that you inherit from your parents or what have you? I'm pretty sure you inherit their cost basis as well. So it depends how they treated it. At the end of the day, this is a voluntary tax system. So it's up to you to report to the government, hey, I got this $3 gold piece and I sold it and I made this much money, because no one is going to do that work for you. That's your work. You have to do it. Mm-hmm. Just like if you had an old Mustang sitting in the garage since 1967 that you paid $3,000 for. Now, granted, that brings us to a whole other subject, the bracket creep and inflation. You know, the car cost you $3,000 then. If they were making it today, it would cost $30,000. Not because the car is that much better, but because the dollar is worth that much less. So to me, the $30,000 would probably be a reasonable cost basis for this coin, or for this car, even though you only paid $3,000 for it in 1967. You follow me?
Yeah, I'm following.
So, you know, today it would cost $30,000. So to tax me on the inflation that occurred between $3,000 and $30,000 doesn't seem fair.
It's a little much.
It is a bit much. But consult your individual tax accountant if you sell a piece of property and you think you may have gains that are unreported.
But I thought you had said at one point, did I mishear you, where if you had a particular coin like a $20 gold piece that you can pass it on to your kids as $20?
Well,
is that
true? Absolutely true. Until that thing is sold for something more than $20, that's all that it is. It's $20, legal tender. So they can't assign some other.
That's true. I mean, that's
not. Well, that is true. Huh? No, that's absolutely
that's
true.
Pretty cool.
After all, that's all that this coin is. Remember when the federal government itself sold the 1933 $20 gold piece that they had seized from Ned Fenton, the British dealer who surfaced the coin. So he seized his coin and then auctioned it off for $30 million.
What?
Well, no.
Oh, I remember.
No, forgive me.
Yeah.
It was $7.5 million.
Okay,
$7.5 million. Now, I was there at the auction, and the last thing that the treasurer of the United States did was she said, oh, wait, and she reached in her pocketbook.
This is pure. This
and
is
pulled
crazy.
Out a $20 bill, uh-huh. And said, I have to make this legal. And she actually paid for the $20 gold piece on behalf of the government with a $20 bill.
Federal because Reserve note.
Yeah. At law, there was no difference between the two. And so, you know, to me,
amazing.
That was just reinforcing what I already know to be a fact, that they can't assign some other value to your money other than what its legal tender status is. So just because you held that $100 bill for 100 years and now it's a collector's item, doesn't mean it's worth any less or more than it said on its face when you put it away, $100. So,
if you had that $20, $7 million coin, theoretically it's valued, and you were on an airplane and you're traveling to Bolivia to do whatever.
What do you got in your pocket?
Yeah, what do you got in your pocket? You really got 20 bucks?
That's what I have, $20. Here it is. I'll show it to you. Take a look. Read it. What does it say? $20.
Well, what if some dude at the thing says, no, I got my book here. That's worth $7 million.
Well, maybe to you it's worth $7 million, maybe to that book it's worth $7 million, but to me it's worth $20. So good luck with that. Yeah, mind up. You know what? It might wind up as a legal case. Would the guy at the airport maybe seize it and then force you to prove your case to get it back? Sure. They've done that before.
So you probably wouldn't want to take a $7 million coin in your pocket on an airplane. Not a good idea.
Not that I haven't done it.
So. Not that you haven't. Don't try this at home.
Though, don't right? try this at home.
All right, kiddo. We love you. Thanks for your work. We'll see
Thank you
next week.
Yeah.
And If you'd like to reach Andrew Goss for any number of reasons, he and his staff are there to serve you. If you'd like to explore numismatic coins, 800-468-2646, 800-468-2646. They can look at your website, which is?
AndyGoss.com or USGoldCoins.com.
Kind of gives you an overview of your company and things like that.
Yeah, well, the commercial side, USGoldCoins.com. If you just want to read and get some of my past information, then that's AndyGoss, G-A-U-S-E.com.
Got a lot of fun
read
stuff.
All you want, man, till your eyes bleed. No, no charge for that.
All right, my friend, thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. I really enjoy this Wednesday visit, as you can tell. If you have half as much fun as I do and learn half as much as I do, I think we have accomplished a lot. Thank you for your ongoing support. We appreciate your confidence in the products that we promote. A lot of cool things from the sauna. Don't forget the sauna's on sale now if you want to do that one. Rebounder, the EMF things, the aloe, of course, the amazing sulfur, Daniel Vitalis, just great stuff. We've researched these. We know these people. Our trademarkers know the source. So if you're interested in spending some money on your health and your well-being, we appreciate you considering One Radio Network for these products because we know these folks. Also, remember if you can just look on the website and see the ad for Amazon and put that as your bookmark. And every time you shop at Amazon, we get a commission off that. That helps us pay the house payment. That's how we do it. So I love you all very much. I'll see you tomorrow with Richard Massey for their monthly visit on One Radio Network at 9 o'clock Central Time. Have a nice day.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.